You're listening to the Focus on Women podcast, where our mission is to elevate female-identifying creatives in the commercial photography industry.
We talk with all types of creatives, from producers, art directors, creative directors, to photographers, agents, and stylists. We dig into how they got to where they are today.
I'm Shelley Waldman, a commercial and editorial photographer focusing on food and lifestyle, living between London and California.
And I'm Lauren Hubbard, a commercial and editorial food lifestyle photographer based in Atlanta, Georgia.
And we're going to dig into this next episode.
Let's do it. Hey there, Shelley.
What's happening, Lauren? What's going on in your world? What's happening in the ATL?
Right now, it's my son's spring break. So he is here from, he's up from Puerto Rico. So we've been kind of chilling and it's officially trying to be spring here in Georgia. So it's beautiful, unlike your random hailstorms over there in London. So
I know you have baseball season that started. I am it's opening day.
We have baseball season starting. I've just finished the last couple weeks. So end of February, we did preseason menu for the Braves, shot all of that. But then they had like one dish that they weren't quite done with that they were like, oh, we're going to tweak this a little bit. So we'll have you back to get that and maybe two other things. Well, that turned into like 20 things last week. And they were like, oh, and can we get these next day? Because like, it's about to be opening season. We have to do all the menus and all the media images. So it's like, okay, sure. So it's been a mad dash into opening day. And I'm excited it's here. Go Braves. And especially go Braves food. I love that.
You got to go back to a game so you can see all your awesome work.
Oh, always, always. I love going to Braves games. Shelley, we're going to have to do a Braves game next if you make it here in the summer.
I'm writing that down right now.
Okay, do it. Yes, absolutely.
Making it happen, Braves game with Lauren. You know me, I love a good baseball game.
It's good stuff. And Truist Park is really spectacular. What about you? What's going on in your world?
Well, I'm planning this big trip to the States. I've got I want to do a coffee and creative meetup in LA. And so working on trying to find a location. And then I've got this big trip this summer where I'm going to New York, Atlanta, and Chicago. So, and then hopefully some meetings in Chicago, but most of that trip will be for fun. I got a wedding in New York and we've got my niece's high school graduation in Northwest Indiana. So it'll be really fun.
Nice, nice. Well, I'm excited. We have an interesting guest with us today, Erin. Erin, can you tell me how to say your last name? Because I don't want to mess it up.
And it's okay. Most people do. It's Shimeka.
Ooh, Shimeka. All right.
That's Shimeka. Most people think it's Shimeka, but
I didn't even go through the process of trying to figure out. I was like, I'm just going to ask. Erin Shimeka, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. So happy to be here, ladies.
Thank you. I'm a little extra intrigued. I hate to say it, but I'm like, when we talk to non-photographers, because it's just a world, you know, anybody who's, you know, doing something other than photography, I'm like, I want to know more about your world. So let's be honest. I want to know about everybody's world, no matter what you do, but I'm excited to dig into yours. Erin, if you're like waiting in line somewhere and someone's like, what do you do? What's your quick answer? Yeah,
I'm
what's your quick answer?
Professional people watcher.
Oh,
I'm at heart a model scout, but I now own my own mother agency. So that is, I find models and develop them and represent them worldwide.
Wow. Oh, you discover people basically.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Hence the professional people watcher. Sometimes I'm staring and I'm seeing, wow, that person feels really uncomfortable that I'm looking at them. I have to stop.
Oh, that's really interesting. That's such a fun, like quick answer, that professional people watcher. I just watch people. What is your favorite part about that?
Honestly, I think the thing I love the most is when you have this girl who has maybe been a little bit picked on in school because she's really tall and her body isn't like a typical teenager because she's very slender and thin. And you watch her come into this and all of a sudden she she's gone from that girl that's been picked on, so she slouched her shoulders, to now becoming the swan and realizing that those things that people thought were weird about her can now put her into this world of beauty and high fashion and hopefully give her great money to, you know, have for the rest of her life.
Wow. Oh, that is like a beautiful, that is a beautiful like perk and highlight of what you do, is like shining Definitely. A light on people who maybe have been trying to hide from it.
I never thought about that before until I started doing, I do a model camp, and all of a sudden you'd have all these girls that would come that would be so nervous about meeting other girls. They would come and stay at my house, and the moms would be like, oh, she feels, you know, people bully her in school. She feels like, so she has such low self-esteem. And then all of a sudden they all kind of navigated to each other because they all have felt that same way. And most people think like, oh, models were the prettiest girls in school. Not the case. So when you get them all together and they all of a sudden realize, oh, okay, there's other girls feeling like me, they start to stand up straighter. They start to feel a little bit better about themselves and embrace the height. So it's kind of a cool thing to watch.
I love that so much.
There's something, speaking about watching people grow and shine, something that really stood out on your bio to me that I want to take us back to that moment. And it says you were presented with a golden key.
Oh, that was my daughter, my stepdaughter.
Oh, that's your stepdaughter.
Yep.
So yep. I'm like, this is so fascinating. So you have a photographer in the midst, right?
yep.
And I guess I misread that because I thought it said Erin. So it says Emily.
Emily. Yep.
E names really getting to
me. Exactly.
But what is really fascinating is that you have this immense time where you were scouting in New York City before you started your agency.
Correct.
And what I'm curious, because you said mother agency, and I guess I don't understand, what is the difference between an agency and a mother agency, one?
Yep.
And then I want you to take us back, you know, 20 plus years to New York, and like, how did you get into this world in the first place?
Sure. So I'll answer the first one, the mother agency. So a lot of people don't realize that these big agencies in New York, they're so busy, they don't necessarily have time to be out there finding models. And especially in America, we have so many people all around. So mother agencies are the smaller markets. Sometimes they're in big markets, but usually in the smaller markets, they're the agencies or the scouts that find a model. So I'm walking on the street, I find this girl, I ask her to be a model, she decides she wants to be. And then I work with her on photography, getting her to understand the business, what we call development, teaching her the business, getting her first photo shoots, kind of walking through that path in the whole beginning of her model journey. And then when the timing is right and the age is right, I start managing her by placing her with agencies all around the world in the main markets. So New York, Paris, Milan, and as the hence the name mother, we're there to then protect them. So I'm there, my job is solely to provide for the model that they are getting placed with the right agencies. They're getting their money when they should be getting their money. They're moving on to the next market when they need to do it. So we kind of facilitate between the agencies they're placed with and the model to make sure they're always, you know, doing what they need to be doing. They're protected. They have somebody that they know, I'm not working for another agency. So my job isn't to make sure in the end that the agency is doing the right thing. My job is solely to make sure the model's doing what she needs to do and people are doing what they need to do for her. So she can rely on me to have her best future in mind. Yeah.
That's interesting. I don't think I've ever heard that definition. So thank you for that.
Yeah. So most of the like little agencies you'll find around America outside of the big markets are considered mother agents. So their goal is to find models that they can then place in all the different markets around the world.
Huh. That's so fascinating. I mean, I was just working with a model here in London. I was basically assisting on a test shoot. And it was interesting because she came in and she's like, I got 3 hours and then I'm on a plane to South Africa for like fashion week or whatever it was. And I was like, what? And she's like, oh yeah, I'll be down there for like 3 months. That's the window. And then I come back here for, you know, the next whatever window of time. And then she goes somewhere else for a window. And I was like, I mean, I thought I traveled a lot, but wow.
Yes, I know. I have girls all over, scattered all over the world right now, in LA, in New York, in Asia, in Europe. So they're always kind of, they're nomads. They're traveling all around. Like, that's how you build your career, especially in the beginning.
Wow, fascinating. So how did you get into this crazy business? I mean, let's go back. Like, where did this all start?
So I was in my senior year of college. I'm from Massachusetts originally, from a really small town called Holland, Mass, that nobody usually has ever heard of. It's central Massachusetts. I was a total mama's girl, so I didn't want to go away to college. So I commuted. I went to a school in Western Mass called Bay Path College. And the only thing I had ever thought I wanted to be in life was an interior designer. Like, I literally would make floor plans of my room and change it constantly. So that was what I was going to school for. But in doing so, we had classes with fashion students because we had to learn about the textiles and whatnot. So I loved my fashion teacher, and she kind of got me. And I had always been into sewing and making clothes. And so she kind of got me starting to think about, maybe this is what I wanted to do. So I actually did my internship in New York City for Phillips Van Heusen, making men's white men's shirts. It was the most boring thing. And I thought, literally, if this is what I have to do, like sitting at a light box with strands of white thread matching it to a white button, I was like, okay, maybe this isn't what I want to do either. And I had had friends, one of which in school, that her family owned a bridal shop, and we had done, just for fun for her, like some modeling jobs. And one of my friends that had done it with me had really actually had thought at one point about being a model. So she had met this woman that happened to live in our same very small town of Holland, Massachusetts. And she was working on this project for this agency. Now, granted, I knew models existed. I love my magazines, but I never thought about this whole concept of agencies that represented. I guess I never realized, where do these models come from? So she's working for this agency called Elite. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. Okay. She's looking for some help in the summer to put together this program they had called Elite Model Look. And they were going to take it across America, a model search that was going to go from mall to mall. And she needed someone to help her organizing it and out of her home office. And I'm like, when? I don't have to get a real job yet. I have to walk and literally walk down the street. And this sounds kind of cool. And so I said to my mom and dad, like, let me have my one summer of fun and not like really think about it. And I promise I'll get a real job like in the fall. And in the middle of the summer, so Elite Model Look is basically the contest that found Cindy Crawford and Giselle and Stephanie Seymour. So it was a really big deal. Again, not realizing any of this at the time. They were going, it was a big marketing campaign pretty much for them, along with a model search. So they were going across America. Elite was very well known, especially in Europe and somewhat in America, but this was a way to really get the name out there and to find models. So I helped her organize this mall tour, and they were going to put on fashion shows. And in the middle of the summer, the director of this company in New York got let go, and they asked the woman I was working for to become the director. So she asked me if I wanted to take her job on, which was going to go to 110 cities across America, putting on this mall show. And again, a girl who's never really left home or her parents. And I was like, yeah, I think I want to do this. Like, why not? Like, I'll continue my like summer of fun to now travel across America and get paid. And so again, promised mom and dad, like, let me just do this 1 year. And my mom, you know, I think about this all the time, because thankfully she never voiced this to me, but she's told me years later, like, she was like, yeah, you'll be back in 2 weeks because you can't leave home. And almost 30 years later, and I'm still doing it. So I went around that first year. I started in 1995 and going into New York, and all of a sudden seeing like Naomi Campbell and Amber Valletta and Stephanie Seymour and all these huge models. And you're like, whoa, like, okay, I this is pretty cool. And it was like huge eye opener for me. And really, you know, this is before cell phones, this is before smartphones. So I'm with maps. Half of my trip was driving, half of it was flying, and I'm trying to navigate myself across America to all these different malls. Literally, it was like 110 stops.
Oh my goodness.
And putting on this event. And again, I was pretty outgoing with my friends, but in public, no. I was so shy. I never raised my hand in class. And now I had to get on a stage in a mall with thousands of people and be like, hey, come on down to this model search. And I can remember my first time, like we had a script because you had sponsors, and I was literally shaking, like my paper was shaking. And by like the second week, I'm like, hey, we're being down. So it was like a huge, like life-changing experience for me. And at the end, they offered me, like it was supposed to just be this one time, but they offered me a full-time job. And I was like, why not? Let's see. Like, this is super interesting. I got to travel and I got to go to New York City, which I really loved. And it just stuck. I worked there for 5.5 years. I ended up becoming the last year and a half, I was the director of the event. So I was in my 20s getting now run this whole event for North America. The world was starting to change in fashion, and our agency was starting to change, and they were going through a little bit of turmoil. So I was kind of like, all right, second guessing myself. Did I really pick the right business to be in? I'm still this small town girl, and you know, all this drama is happening around me, and I don't know about it. And thankfully at that time I did not give up. And one of the agents that I worked with went to a different agency, and she knew I was unhappy and told the owner, who was looking for somebody like me, to come. And I left, and I worked at New York Models, and they were 5 years old at the time. And I went from this big powerhouse of an agency now to a boutique agency. And I was there for 17 years as the director of scouting development. So now I went from touring America to touring the whole world. So I got to go, you know, to Brazil, to Africa, all over Europe, and fashion weeks twice a year, and Paris, Milan. Like it was pretty amazing. And again, like this whole other like life-changing experience. And yeah, I loved it. I was there for 17 years. And in 2018, again, things changed. I was kind of missing Massachusetts. I wanted to be back home and closer to family. And I decided to leave and come back here. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. As you probably know, in this business, it's so fast paced. I literally had maybe had like 2 2-week vacations in my whole time and nothing else, because I was traveling constantly. So I said, okay, let's take a month off and figure out what you want to do. And I had great offers to go work for other agencies. By this time, I had a very successful career, so people had known me. But I was like, I really want to do something different. I want to do something on my own. I want to do something in the way I believe it should be. There's so many negative parts about this business that you hear about, and I wanted to be the person that could make that change. Not charge models an arm and a leg. I actually don't charge them for anything I do. Be able to really educate them and teach them about this business, and empower them as women to be like, I'm not in this world of competition. Instead, we're all here to work together and raise each other up. And hence Signed was born in 2018. And 6 years later, we're doing awesome. Got models placed all around the world. And it's been really like something I wish I had maybe done sooner, because I really love the fact that, again, I get to work with these girls and show them their strengths and show them something different that they can do in this world that really, you know, can teach them so many life lessons. And we have a great community of girls that all lift each other up. Nobody here is, you know, catty against each other. One success is all of our successes. And it's something that I'm probably the most proud about, because, you know, as women, we can tend to be mean to each other or tear each other down, and especially with teenage girls. So it's something really beautiful in that sense. And I absolutely am even more passionate about the business than I was before. And I love doing it.
So one of the things that you mentioned was that you wish you had started this sooner. And one is, I get it, right? The passion really comes through about what you're doing. But I'm curious, like, do you think you would have been ready if you had started this sooner?
It's funny, you know, I think that's my, like, a blessing and a curse. So the blessing is that I don't know many other mother agents that have had 23 years as a successful agent in New York. So I'm actually able to really give the models a good feeling about what it's going to be like going to New York and going to these other markets. And I've traveled pretty much everywhere they're going to travel as a model. So I know people firsthand that they're going to work with. And then the curse is that I feel so many people there, you know, so many young girls want to be a model. So many people are like, oh, I've always wanted to be a model. And they're, all it takes is one person to tell them, yes, you can. And they're going to spend $10,000 to try to do it. And they're going to spend thousands of dollars on wardrobe and this, and maybe they're never going to have a chance. So like the curse part is like, I wish I could have helped like so many other people have the right direction on what they should have done. But I think I did it at the right time, even though I wish like maybe 5 years earlier I had, I don't know. But I do feel like it was the right time, even though, again, I wish there were more people I could have like had a better impact on that I have met in my travels that have come to me and been like, oh, we had to put a second mortgage on our house to do this. And I'm like, oh yeah. Like you just want to help people, you know, I don't know. It sometimes is like gut wrenching. And that was my main force and drive in doing this too, is I really wanted to do something different and be able to provide that educational level without charging the models thousands of dollars to do so.
So let's talk about the running a business versus being an employee sure. in a business, right? very different things.
Yes.
And even though you had, I mean, this immense background that you kind of fell into in a kind of a funny way, let's talk about setting up the business, right? And you even just said like one of the things you really wanted to do was have this education component, have this model camp and raise people's confidences and, you know, kind of have them come out of their shells a little bit. What were some of those early learnings and looking at how to put this business together? And what were you discovering like, gee, I don't really know how to do this. And maybe who did you turn to answer some of those questions?
Sure. So the one, again, blessing is at New York Models being a boutique agency, I did have my hands on a lot of things and I was a director. So I knew the contracts, I knew the taxes issues, I knew like the backbones of all of that. So I do feel I was lucky in that aspect because that is something so confusing. Like these modeling contracts are like no other contracts. And I think it would have been hard if I hadn't had that expertise in reading them and know what should be in them and what shouldn't. But I think like even the little parts of like, do you become an LLC? Do you become a S Corp? You know, all knowing that part, that was a little bit frustrating at first. And in Massachusetts, it's very different. You have to pay quite a bit of money to have to be an LLC. And so I was, you know, back and forth with that. And I did rely on, I have thankfully again, an uncle that's a lawyer and I relied on my accountant and people like that to kind of say like, do I really need to do this? And then I think the other part that was hard for me is as an agent and in a modeling agency, it's like a beehive. You sit on this long table all right next to each other because you have to be able to listen to everything that's going on. And now it's just me in an office in my home by myself. And my husband actually works at home. So eventually, like every once in a while, I go, Gauss, what? This girl just did this. And he's like, oh, cool. He has no clue. Where before it would be like, oh my God, I found this girl and she did this. And everyone in the agency would be all excited. So that's been honestly the hardest part for me until I started to find my people here on Cape Cod. And I think that was my other like hard part. Again, as being someone who's like, I am extroverted but in some points introverted, like it's hard to go out and meet new people. I don't have my own children and we don't have kids in school, so it's kind of hard as a 50-year-old woman to be, you know, finding your people. But I found them here and I didn't think I would, and we have amazing designers here and photographers, and I've started to reach out organically to those people or they came to me. And now having those people, those are the people I can go to and be like, oh, guess what, this, and we're all excited together. But it took a little while, and working by yourself and for yourself, it can be really lonely. Like you do want to have like those triumphant moments with people who get it, and that was kind of the I think that was my biggest struggle out of anything in the beginning.
Did you know there is so much more to Focus on Women? We actually have a membership.
As a member, you have the opportunity to work with a mentor, highlight your work through our artist spotlight, partake in portfolio reviews, and best of all, keep the conversation going through our member-only Slack channel.
Hop on over to focusonwomen.org and sign up today to take advantage of all these benefits that will move you forward and support you on your journey.
Now, back to our show.
I think working alone is something many of us in the creative industry know all too well. And I do think like finding that circle of like business BFFs, right? Where you can, even if they're not in the same industry and maybe they don't 100% understand like the win that you're talking about, but they can still be excited for you. And you can text them and be like, hey, this happened. Like Lauren and I do this all the time. You know, we'll send each other voice memos like, hey, this is going on. Or I just heard this thing and like, it's so exciting. And then you're like, yeah, go get it. Or that's super cool. And so it's funny, or not, it's not funny, haha, but like funny in that you went from like the big city where there's a lot of people around you to Cape Cod, right? Which is this little kind of microcosm unto itself. I would just say microcosm. Just small. And so I want to talk a little bit about that mental shift too, right? Because what you're doing is you're creating models to work in obviously all different areas of the world, from small markets to giant markets. But you yourself have kind of taken yourself out of that giant market, put yourself into this more boutique market. What was that transition like?
So, you know, again, being a New York agent, you get really spoiled. We get our haircuts at the best places for free. You get like this and that. And whenever you're doing an event, you call people and everyone wants to give you stuff. So that was like my, at first I was like, oh, how am I going to do any of this? Like nobody up here is going to care about fashion or modeling. They're probably like poo-poo it, but it's actually completely the opposite. I remember, I do this model camp where models come up and they stay here. They literally camp in our backyard and we spend 4 days teaching them about the business. I have photographers that come in and shoot them. And I wanted to do this aspect of like a fashion show and have them do something locally. And I remember thinking, okay, I know where I can do one, but who am I going to get to want to participate in this? And they're going to have to give us clothes for free. I don't have the budget to pay for any of this. I literally had 4 people in mind, and it ended up being that I ended up having 13 designers because so many people were so excited about it. And half of them actually made their own clothes here on Cape Cod. And that's what started to change everything for me, that there was like this whole like world here. I was a summer kid here. This was literally my favorite place in the world to go to. But I kept thinking of it as the summer kid, like where nothing happens outside of the summer and it's all houses are shut up. It's older people, but it's not the case anymore. There's such a great young community here of super creative people. And again, it's known for their photographers and their artists, but wearable art, there's a huge portion of that here that people don't know about. And that has launched me into now I do a fashion show every year. We're starting a little bit of a Cape Cod Fashion Week and working with these awesome local designers that people had no idea about that are now like getting out there. And again, I thought, you know, I was never going to have my people here. And of course, I still have so many friends that are agents in New York. And so I keep up with what's happening in New York, and not like that I'm so far I can drive into New York easily. But I did feel that was going to be a struggle. And then I also thought it would be a struggle trying to encourage kids in a smaller community to want to travel, to leave. Like I know a lot of people in my small town didn't go too far. And I feel like that kind of happens sometimes because you're too afraid of what's out there, or it's the opposite way and you're ready to go as far away as possible. But I have had such a support, you know, I've found so many great kids right here. Like, I don't know if you can see, but this girl here, she's a local girl, just with me now for a year. I found her actually while I was sick with COVID on Instagram. And she's now been this kid from Eastham, Mass on Cape Cod, small town, never left anywhere. She's been in 1 year to New York, to Paris, to Korea, to China, to Bangkok. She's done 2 Vogue shoots. And it's amazing. Like she says every day, like, I can't believe like how you've changed my life. Like, I thank you so much for like what this opportunity you've given me. Her parents are so supportive. And that's something I thought again was going to be a struggle because so many people, you know, have that traditional trajectory of going into college and this is a business. So you really have to be full-time in it. So asking people to put school on hold, although now COVID has allowed us to do remote online school a lot more than they used to. I thought was going to be hard too, to convince them to go into this crazy world of modeling that no one here knows anything about, but so supportive. I have so many local kids that have traveled from here recently. And it is, you know, again, kind of life-changing, because they probably wouldn't, if it wasn't for a modeling contract in Korea, get to go to Korea. I have four kids this summer going to Korea, two 16-year-olds here from here. And again, it's, you know, something so different, and their schools are so supportive of it. And it's been not what I thought it was going to be at all. I thought it was going to be much harder, and it has not been.
Oh my goodness.
That was kind of a blessing.
That is fascinating. So I'm super curious, because I have heard a lot of, you know, sort of like some of those horror stories, like what you've talked about, people getting taken advantage of and sort of being really pushed into spending a ton upfront on trying to get into modeling. And I would really love to dig into just a little bit of, you know, sort of just some like myth busting or advice on, you know, for people who, I don't know, like, I guess set the record straight on like, what actually is the table stakes for getting into modeling now, because I feel like probably so different now than it was 15, 20 years ago, especially with the way social media is and access.
Yeah.
To things.
I had to find a girl, ask her to take pictures. She would have to develop the film, mail it in the mail to me. I'd have to review it. Most often they weren't right. I would have to ask them to take them again, mail them back to me again. So the process is so much easier and much different. I think that's why we have so many more models. But so as a model, you're an independent contractor. You're your own business person. You're your own, forming your own company. So yes, the expenses are borne on you. If you're doing a specific job and you're coming in for the job, the client usually pays your flight and your hotel and whatnot. But if you're going in on stay, which is what a lot of people do to develop, you're going to have to pay those expenses at some point. A lot of agencies, although COVID has changed a lot of things, but a lot of agencies have model apartments, and the agency will advance that to you, and eventually it comes out of your paycheck. But I think one of the things, again, because people want to do this so bad, is that you should not pay money upfront. So there, you know, we're making money when you make money. So anyone who's asking you to pay a lot of money to be into this, it's probably not necessarily the right path. I mean, there are some out there that are good, but for the most part, you know, you're not supposed to pay. We make our money off of the commissions of what you're making. So, you know, and what I do is I have, you know, thankfully, again, a lot of connections, and there's a lot of photographers that are starting off. And so we're working on a collaboration together. So I try to find shoots that aren't going to charge a lot of money or be free, because as a new face, it's going to continue. They're going to change. And once they get to New York, they're going to have to do a whole new book. So I work with a lot of new photographers to get their first photo shoots done. But there's some places where they're going to charge you thousands of dollars. Like, that's another like red flag to me in the beginning, unless there's a reason to invest a lot of money. Like if you're 16 or 15 even, and just starting off, you're going to be a much different model in 3 years. So spend your money wisely. But I know people who've come to me and said they spent $10,000 on a portfolio and they're not even signed. And I'm like, what? Like, that's just crazy. And some of these people out there who aren't doing the right thing, they get kickbacks. So like this agency might, you know, in a smaller market, they're struggling to make their money. So they're getting money back from the shoots that you book. I don't know if that happens as much now as it used to, but it used to happen a lot. So those are red flags to me too. But the thing that people don't understand is that you are going to have an investment in this, because you are building your own company. And so you do have to, you know, have a part-time job or a side job in the beginning, because it's going to take a little bit of time. Just like any creative artist that's starting off in this world, you're starting from scratch and you're going to have to find a way to, you know, build your ranks up. So you're going to have a waitressing job or a, you know, hosting job, something that can earn you some extra money to live in the city. But I think the huge expenses, you know, should be borne by the people that are your agencies that are handling you, because they expect you to not have thousands of dollars up front to pay for an apartment.
Right, right. What are the kinds of, like, do you work with, it sounds to me like you work with placing your talent with like job opportunities as well. So it's that you help them find agencies, but then you're also placing, like helping them get jobs. Is it both? I'm trying to understand that world a little bit, because this is very new. That piece of it, I don't understand a whole lot of.
Yeah. So I do book some jobs locally. So okay. I know some models in Boston, some jobs. There's now that we have a lot of people we're working with here on Cape Cod. So I do give them experience locally so that they, especially for the young ones, so that they can get to feel what it's like to be a model and see if they actually really like this. Right. But once they are placed in New York or Paris or London, like they're booking their jobs through the agency that I placed them.
Gotcha. Okay. Because my question was going to my follow-up question, if you are doing a lot of that of placing your models with job opportunities, is what kinds of, you know, like people seeking talent or maybe like looking for, you know, newer talent, what are those right people to come to you?
Yeah. So for the agencies, you mean?
No, for like, for the, you know, for the models.
Yeah. So I, as my experience has been in high fashion, that's really still my like niche. So I am looking for the models that are taller, that have those proportions for high fashion. I don't know. I just feel like I can do my services the best in that world, because that's what I know. I don't know the commercial world as well. And the people I know and work with are in the high fashion field. So I do take young people on, though, that might still be growing, and then we see what happens and we go from there. COVID had changed a lot of things as far as sizes and whatnot, but now I feel the industry is going back again. So it has been harder. I do have a lot of girls that I was taking chances on that were 5'7" and sometimes a little bit under, but now I feel like it's getting hard again for those girls to really work and get placed. I want, you know, to have girls that are gonna, you know, go into those main markets. I'm not really interested in taking on people that are going to just work in Boston. I want to know that they're going to go to New York, they're going to go to Paris, because those are the places you can have a career and really, you know, be in this business. So I am looking more for the high fashion type of model.
Okay. What are some ways that you feel like the creatives, like the other kinds of creatives that work with models, what are some things that, you know, they could do that we all could do to, I guess, to be more mindful of like the model perspective of what they're going through and trying to like build their career?
Well, I mean, as photographers, you probably know how important it is for a model to have, you know, to start off with some kind of pictures. So for us, when we're thinking of a model, my job is to create images that are going to showcase them to the agent. So I'm not thinking necessarily about yet to the clients. I'm thinking to the agent. So a test book, or even for a new model, a test book should really be about featuring them. So sometimes I'll have people who want to be super creative and put crazy, you know, makeup on them or weird things on their head or crazy outfits, and then you can't see the model. So again, I want to obviously be able to, especially if we're doing, you know, a shoot that's a collaboration, so nobody's making money off of it, we want to be able to give the photographer what they want, but I then need them to give what we're going to put in their book, which are going to be super clean images that really show their cheekbones and their lips and their eyes and highlight them as a blank canvas. So then the agent or the client can say, okay, I can transform this person into that. Even in New York, we don't put tests in books that are too crazy. That can be an editorial. If Steven Meisel is shooting them for Italian Vogue and it's some crazy shoot, yeah, that can go in the book. But if we're just doing a test, it really has to be focusing on their blank canvas. So neutral clothes, really simple styling, no props, really focusing on their features.
Yeah, I know when I shoot a lot of new faces, even though I might have that crazy idea of like, I'm going to turn them into birds, right? Which was really a shoot that I did with some tweens. But I made sure to tell the modeling agency, I said, but before we do all of that, we're going to shoot stuff for their books specifically for, you know, getting really good new headshots. showing their personality, you know, with like a more casual, like an elevated casual outfit.
Exactly.
And we did some more like lifestyle stuff outside, and then we shot some studio stuff, and then I could go totally nuts and do my,
yeah. Well, because I think it's also super disappointing to a girl if she gives her time to and does a shoot and then we can't put anything in the book. And then they're like, well, why can't I use that? Why did you have me spend 8 hours on a shoot and not be able to use anything in my book? So I then have to explain to them too. And then they're doubting you as like, why did you okay this mood board? Why did you okay that it was all right to do this? And, you know, so, but I understand the both, like you said. I understand that people want to be creative and do stuff for your book too. As long as we can do the two together, like I think that's important.
Yeah, and I think that also talks to, you mentioned the mood board. And for those that have never worked with a modeling agency or want to, like, I'm actually working on a test shoot where I need models, right? And I think it's really important to talk to that mood board piece. Like when someone wants to do this test or wants to work with one of your models, what do you want to get from them?
Sure. So I actually talk to every photographer before I let them shoot with the girls. So I want to know that they're a real person, that they're, you know, not somebody else that they're saying they are, and the girl's going to show up to set with something crazy. So I always talk to them first, and I ask them to tell me their concepts. Like, what is it that you're looking for or doing? Sometimes I'll share my, I have like mood boards I've put together, like what we really need to get. Like, I love like Celine's, like very black and white, white and black, like their mood board's one of my favorites. So I pick some of that and show that to photographers. Right now, what's really in, I feel, are the baggiest clothes ever. So like really oversized men, you know, jackets and almost like men's pants that are kind of falling off the girl a little. Like, I feel like that's very in right now. And the masculine is definitely something that's super important. I don't know why we don't want girls sitting with their legs crossed and very feminine. We actually like a little bit more of a masculine type of look. So, you know, maybe, you know, hunched shoulders and, you know, legs out and like arms down, like something a little bit less feminine. I feel like that's kind of the vibe that's happening right now. I do, you know, always ask, show me your mood board. I also think a mood board is so important because it shows the girl the feeling. And especially for new models, if they're, it's new models that are testing, they want to kind of know what are they expected of. Give me some options on poses, like, so they can study them. I do lots of videos that I show to any new girl that's shooting some examples of poses, because this is something, although it's changed a lot because of social media, people know how to pose a lot better than they used to. They're taking selfies all the time, but sometimes that too much like tilt of the head, which is what people like to do with selfies, is not what we want in the modeling. So I have reels put together that I show to them to like get posing like inspiration. But I think the mood board is really important in agreeing with the photographer on what we're looking like. You know, if it's a shoot that the girls are paying for, I think it's important that it's a styled shoot, because teenage girls, especially in America, are not going to have the best style sense. Some of them do, but most of them are wearing sweatpants and sweatshirts all the time. So to expect them to have a blazer and a white button up shirt and like cool slacks, it's just not going to happen. So, I do encourage them to, like, I have a full model closet here for any models when we shoot, and they can come take it if they're going to a shoot so that they have the right wardrobe, because that's another thing that can ruin the picture. If you're not, to me, the styling is just as important as the photographer, because if you have a girl in like, you know, Abercrombie jeans and a sweatshirt, like it's just not, that's not going to sell high fashion to me. I need them to be tailored and, you know, some kind of a cool outfit that's going to show their form and just the, you know, that creative sense to it. But I think making sure that the photographer is specific to us about what clothing they should bring and giving details and examples. Again, I do a lot of that. I show them what they should have in their closet, but not everyone's going to. So I think it's important that you're very specific on the looks you want, even putting a mood board together of just clothing ideas and then a mood board together of styling or posing ideas, I think is super important too. I don't know if that answered your question.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's really interesting to think about like the poses, right? Especially when working with new models, it's something I probably could be better at. I do a clothing inspiration board, and I always have clothes. I tend to pull at least one outfit and maybe like a secondary.
Sure.
And then I tell them to like bring a bag of stuff
Supplement with their stuff.
And then maybe we'll, you know, muddle it all together.
Yep.
But I've actually never really thought about the poses. I usually have the mood board for like what it is that we're going to do and what the mood is. And, you know, if we're doing like right now, my test shoot I'm working on is like pizza and soda around like sports.
Oh, fun.
And so, you know, I have some mood board photos that I've pulled, but I haven't. Yeah, like you just gave me a whole great idea. Like, I should put this whole like clothing board together.
Well, especially most of the people you're going to get for tests are going to be newer models. Those are who the agency is going to give you. And some photographers are good at directing them, but some are not. So it's always safe, I think, to have like some poses that you have in mind, because I'll have girls all the time. Like I usually do, if it's a new girl, I'm on the shoot with them so I can help walk them through it. But so many times they're like, I don't know what to do now. What do I do? Like, I've done this enough times and I've done this enough times and this enough times. Like, what do I do next?
Yeah.
So it's good for them to have that little bit to study.
Yeah, I like directing people.
Good. I can't tell you, though, how many people struggle with it. So many people struggle with it.
Well, I know, Lauren, you're similar this way. We're like, I like to set up the scene and kind of like let it fall apart, if you will. And kind of like shoot through that emotion or shoot through that, like whatever it is that I have people doing or interacting or saying, or like with kids, I used to shoot a lot of kids in studio for clothing. And I would tell them, like, if there was like a small ladder, you know, like a 3-step ladder or something, I'd be like, okay, so the next 4 poses, you can't be on the same step. Right. So it would force them to kind of like move around and use the ladder in different ways.
That's cute.
You know, or like, you know, stack them in different ways, or always give them something so they had something in their hand. Just as like a simple prop, like you were saying, like it could be like an old school camera. And I used to actually put film in it and let them take pictures of me while I was taking pictures of them.
Those candid pictures are sometimes amazing, where you're getting them to actually do something. I remember being on a shoot with Teen Vogue, I think it was, or 17 Magazine, one of them. And they were shooting one of my younger girls, and she was having a hard time. And so the woman just started going crazy. She's like, look at me, I'm being silly, so that she could get the girl to actually react. So it's like, I've always taken that away now, and I actually do it on set all the time to get them to be genuine, because those forced smiles can be a little hard sometimes.
Yeah.
So I start just going crazy sometimes when I'm on set, like making the most ridiculous voices, and the girl's looking at me like, what are you doing? But they'll legitimately laugh and the picture will be so much better.
Oh yeah. Sometimes you just got to get people out of their heads.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the majority of I don't shoot fashion, but I do shoot like a lot of lifestyle and food lifestyle. So it is about trying to create a sense of like genuine emotion.
Exactly.
And so it's that, like, especially when I, you know, am able to work with like professional talent versus sort of like the real people, not that professional talent, real people, but very different mindset from those people coming into it. Right. And it's amazing to work with professional talent, because they can bring a set of tools. And so it takes a lot off of my shoulders, but even then it then becomes this collaborative effort of like, okay, let's get into a headspace of something and sort of play through it. Like Shelley was saying, like, this is a thing and we need to move through it versus it being a very, and I actually did, I had one, and I still remember it. I had one shoot where I really, because I kind of thought, you know, I'm always having people kind of move through stuff and it's almost like they have to act through it versus getting into a position and kind of like posing for it. And so I did play around, and it was still a food lifestyle thing where I did have them sort of like, it was about getting into a certain spot and then like holding that. And I just didn't like it as much. I mean, the images, like the client loved the images and all that, but I just was like, yeah, I don't want to ever do it that way again. Like this is not my, it just feels, I can tell the difference in the photos.
Right.
I'm like,
I think that's been my biggest struggle with photographers here, because a lot of them are like portrait photographers or shoot weddings. So they're used to like posing people. And when you have a model, you should let the model model, like let them do it organically and they're going to come through with it. And it is like, I just wanted to say what you just said about acting. It is like acting. They become actresses on stage. I remember I had a girl when I was in New York that shot the Balenciaga campaign. And I think it was Steven Meisel that was the photographer. And he had this whole Patti Smith idea. Now she's a 17-year-old kid. She has no idea who Patti Smith is. But she had to go and look it all up. And he wanted her to emulate that. And she had to. And she did a great job with it. The shoot was incredible. But you have to be open to being like, okay, I'm becoming someone else. Like,
yes.
We say like, this is you as the person, and then this is you as the model. And you got to be goofy. You got to be silly. You got to be doing something so awkward. And, you know, teenagers don't want to be awkward. They want to be cool. So they don't want to sometimes do those weird things. But you have to step out of your comfort zone. I encourage them all to take dancing classes or something that's going to make them completely be out of their comfort zone, because you're going to be put in out of your comfort zone many times in modeling.
I love that. I'm curious, I know that it sounds like a lot of your focus is working with models that are up and coming in, that are sort of in your geographical area, like that mm-hmm. Cape Cod, Massachusetts area, but do you work with talent that aren't, if they find you and they're, you know, in.
Yep. I have a girl in Switzerland. I have okay. girls in Texas. I have girls in Florida. I have them all over. So yeah, one of the benefits of having the career I had, there's a lot of articles about me. So when people go to Google Model Scout, I come up quite often. So I get a ton of submissions, and I like to focus more on this region just because I can be very hands-on with them. But with the benefits of Zoom, I can, you know, have a little bit of, of being able to talk and work with them through that. So I do have girls all over.
That's yeah. very cool. I love that. Oh my goodness. This has been so fascinating. So I love asking this at the end, which is like, if you looking back early in your career, especially in those early days where you're like, all right, I'm just going to try it out for a summer. Like, you know, it's going to be okay, mom and dad, this is, you know, not a big deal. If you could go back to, you know, you early in your career, what's a piece of advice you would give yourself?
I think one of the biggest pieces of advice I would have given myself was to learn to find my voice and advocate for myself more. I feel as a young woman, I had, and I maybe kids are different these days, but I had a lot of struggles with like asking for vacation or asking for a raise. And sometimes like I was working so hard and not realizing like, okay, yes, I should say to them, I need more money. And when I finally got the courage up to do it, I got it. But I feel like I went for years without really standing up for myself. And I think as a young person, that sometimes can be hard to find your voice. And I feel like I found mine a little bit later. But I think that was one thing I wish I could go back and tell myself, like, you are valuable, like ask for more, you know, from people. Like I was working every weekend. And like I said, I don't think I had a vacation until I was in my like 30s. I get it that sometimes you have to put in extra time, but I also feel like people can take advantage of that when you're too nice and you're too like shy to speak up for yourself. So I wish I had found my voice a little bit earlier and learned how to advocate for myself more. And I also think learning to take chances. Like I had so many people, especially when I went to do this, that was like, why are you going to do that? And charge for this, you should charge for that. And I'm so glad like I didn't listen to them and I did something that was maybe a little bit more difficult, but it paid off in the end and it made me more passionate about what I'm doing. So I feel like the other thing is to like not let people get into your head and not let them tell you you can't do something. I feel you have to love what you do, and if you love what you do, you can be successful with it at how no matter how you do it, but do it in the way that you feel, you know, the best about.
It sounds like you, that has been a thread for you throughout it all, is that even when you were getting sort of somewhat negative or concerned feedback, like you have an instinct about things and you're like, I'm just gonna try it out. I'm just gonna try it out for a summer. I'm gonna try it out for a year. I'm just gonna see how it goes. And being willing to just listen to that inkling you have and see what it would be like. Feels like it really has paid off for you continuously.
I think my parents for a lot of that, honestly. Like I think about parents today compared to my parents. My parents were hippies. They like were always supporting us in everything we did. But I think about them compared to what parents would do now, because I see it all the time with the people I work with. they could have said to me, oh, are you really sure you want to do that? Like, that doesn't sound like a good idea. I don't know if you have the patience to do that. You're not going to want to stay. They never said that. They pushed me and were like, go have fun. Even though in their back of their head, they thought I wasn't going to be able to do it. But I feel nowadays parents put their fears onto their kids and they voice them to them rather than keeping them to themselves. And I feel like I owe a lot of that to my mom and dad for like, saying, go ahead, do it. Sure. Why not?
Oh, I love
and
that.
Never telling me that I could fail because I never thought I could.
Oh my goodness. What a heartwarming way to like, I love that. That's good. I try to really absorb all of that, like the good lessons that we get from our parents, if other people have learned from that. I learn a lot as a mom on this podcast from people. I tell you what. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that.
You're welcome.
Erin, where can people keep up with signed management and you and all of the good things that you're doing?
Sure. So we have a website. It's www.signedmgmt.com. And our Instagram is the same, @signedmgmt.
Nice. Awesome. Thank you so much for being here. And
thank you so much, guys.
Giving us such a like peek into your world.
Oh,
this is
thank
wonderful.
You. Thank you. I love sharing. Hopefully it helps other people out there. And thank you. I'm honored you guys asked me to be on here. I love what you're doing.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much for listening to this episode. We would like to thank our team, edit and mix production by Sterling Coates, marketing and social media support from Laura Hillstrom and Jen Valina, and booking and production support by Maren Rossman and Tracy Tarek.
We would also like to shout out to our founders, Tracy Tarek and Mary Dell, and the rest of our Focus on Women board and volunteers. Find out more about our organization and how you can get involved at focusonwomen.org.